The major tobacco companies have an advertising budget of $8.5 billion per year. That's over $23 million every day, just used to promote their products. Their prime target? The young. Cigarette companies are dependent on underage smoking. Almost 90% of all regular smokers begin smoking at or before age 18. And almost every smoker tried their first cigarette in childhood. Now that's a serious and devastating issue. Stay tuned as we discuss with a great guest today. Also, we're going to demonstrate an easy and wholesome recipe in our cooking section, and Sean's here to help us stay fit. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerod and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. And if you want our recipes, many health tips, go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. There you'll find all of our previous episodes as well. Let me share with you an excerpt from today's local news. The number of Washington, D.C. retailers illegally selling tobacco to minors has risen to its highest level in more than a decade. That's only the tip of the iceberg, you know. You'll receive plenty of valuable information today during our show. But first, before we start our interview, let me share with you a shocking video from Stanford's historian and professor, Robert Proctor. You don't want to miss any of the details he has to share.
Stanford University.
We only really know what we know about the history of tobacco because of the disclosure through litigation of the so-called secret documents. This is a vast trove of over 70 million pages of formerly secret tobacco industry documents. And these tell a tale of the design of the cigarette, of the effort by the industry to create a device that would create and sustain addiction. If you have people try different types of cigarettes, they can't really tell one type from another because the cigarette itself is, they're basically all the same. The cigarette contains hundreds of different ingredients ranging from castoreum, which is a secretion from the anal gland of the Siberian beaver, to humectants like glycerin and exotic flavorants, and most of the world's licorice. The cigarettes don't sell unless they deliver nicotine because people are addicted. Every year there are 6 million people who die from smoking worldwide, and those are really unnecessary deaths. A great deal of design effort has gone into making this very ordinary product into something that's irresistible, seductive. Most people who smoke, 80 or 90% actually, are addicted, and in fact, cigarettes are as addictive as heroin or cocaine. You've got Santa Claus advertising cigarettes here with the idea being that you should give cigarettes as gifts. The pack of the cigarette itself has become the last bastion of tobacco advertising, a kind of micro ad. And it's one of the reasons that so many countries are starting to push for plain packaging. Imagery is everything. People want to hold these. The American shirt pocket goes right with it. The cigarette is maintained by an elaborate collaboration with academics. Scholars from every discipline have collaborated in keeping the tobacco industry going. They serve as witnesses in court. They advise on the manufacturing properties. They advise in the marketing or the sale. And this is really an undisclosed collaboration that is responsible for the continuation of the tobacco epidemic. It's really kind of like a shadow profession that's gone on behind the scenes, and there's no accountability here. Basically, no part of culture has been exempt and has not been used in order to sell cigarettes. There are lots of things that can be done. The FDA now has the power to regulate the content of cigarettes. And they should take the nicotine as low as possible. The law actually has been written so they can't entirely bar nicotine from cigarettes, but they could reduce it to a level that is so low it would not be able to create and sustain addiction. Cat food and dog food have been more carefully regulated than what goes into cigarettes. Part of this huge burden of death is the result of basically negligence and the industry having a free hand.
Joining me today is Vincent DiMarco, National Coordinator for Faith United Against Tobacco and an Adjunct Assistant Professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He's a leading advocate for social change and public health issues, lobbying legislators and government. Vinny's also the subject of Michael Perstrock's 2010 book entitled The DiMarco Factor, Turning Public Will into Political Power. Welcome, Vinny.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. Now, you're a lawyer, so I'm going to throw you a legal question. As a doctor, I find it absolutely incredible that here we have this powerful industry that manufactures a product designed to addict people while killing and maiming them. How can that be legal?
Well, it's been hundreds of years, and so many people are addicted to tobacco right now that the worst thing we could do would be to make it illegal because so many people are addicted. However, there are strategies that work. And the good news is that over the last few years, there's been a tremendous drop in smoking, particularly in states like my own state of Maryland, that have really worked hard to address the problem. We'll talk later about the specific strategies.
Right.
But we can't make it illegal because so many people are addicted. But what we can do is make it a lot less likely that kids will take up the habit and a lot more likely that adults will quit.
Right. And so just basically have that aim that one day we can eradicate tobacco addiction.
In a way that's feasible, yes. We're working on that and making significant progress.
That's wonderful to hear. Now, you've been up close to the tobacco industry. How honest are they about what they put into the cigarette? You know, that little video clip we heard that, you know, I changed the way I see my licorice now. But, yeah, how honest are they?
It is astounding the kind of horrible products and materials and chemicals that are in cigarettes that people smoke without knowing it. Well, until 2009, they didn't have to tell anybody what was in those products. Unlike every other industry that you could think of that makes food or products that people put on their bodies, who had to have to tell what's on it, until 2009, they didn't have to do that. In 2009, President Obama signed into law historic legislation authorizing the Food and Drug Administration to regulate tobacco products, as was discussed on the video. One of the major provisions is that now the tobacco companies have to disclose what's in it, and soon we will know all of the horrible chemicals in there and be able to tell the public. And as we'll talk later, this success could not have happened without the faith community of America, including the Seventh-day Adventist Church, United Methodist, Southern Baptist, United Church of Christ, Jewish, Muslim, Sikh, all came together to make this happen in a historic public health victory. But in answer to your question is, before 2009, nobody really knew. Now we're going to know.
Now, another strategy is that there are now some restraints on advertising. And what restraints are there, and how are they changing the way the industry works now?
Well, advertising is a complicated area because of First Amendment protections. The FDA regulation of tobacco legislation authorized the Food and Drug Administration to require that their packages, 50% of their packages, be real ads that will discourage smoking. That, as the professor said on the video, is the last vestige of their real advertising, is the package itself. Mm. And this, you know, for years we've had these ridiculous little disclaimers on the packs of cigarettes, that cigarette smoking is unhealthy, which hard to believe they deterred anybody. Mm. But other nations have tried smart policies to really go after what makes people not want to pick up a cigarette. Like young people will be discouraged because cigarettes can cause impotency, and the cigarette pack was one Canadian pack of cigarettes I saw here in a Seventh-day Adventist building had a bent cigarette on it to highlight that. And they, you can design your package of cigarettes in a way that will discourage people from smoking. The cigarette companies naturally don't like that, so they've gone to court. And right now, courts have gone both ways on this. Some courts have upheld the FDA authority to regulate the package. Other courts have overturned that, and now it's going to the United States Supreme Court. Hopefully, the Supreme Court will uphold this authority, because what you want is a cigarette pack that really lets people know the deadliness of the product.
Absolutely, because it's right there, it's in their possession,
yes.
And they've got this warning.
I can't emphasize enough the historic nature of this 2009 legislation, the FDA regulation of tobacco. When the Food and Drug Administration was first created decades and decades ago, the tobacco companies got in there a specific exemption to cigarettes that they didn't have to regulate. They weren't regulating cigarettes. Now, under President Clinton, the Food and Drug Administration worked to overcome that through regulations and was implementing a new rule to regulate tobacco companies. That went to court, and the Supreme Court said, no, you have to do that with Congress. And in 1998, there was an effort to, by legislation, authorize the FDA to regulate tobacco products, which failed in Congress because tobacco companies are so powerful.
Right.
It finally passed, and President Obama signed into law. And again, as I said earlier, the faith community played a key role.
Right. Now, I think one way that now money is spent advertising is that discounts are given. And I think we've got a little clip, a very current, of discounts being given. And we'll have a look at that now.
Great.
We all love coupons, but there's a different kind of coupon hitting the mailboxes of young smokers. According to new research, tobacco companies are using coupons to greatly reduce the cost of tobacco and create a relationship with women and younger smokers. Their average mailer contains nearly $4 worth of coupons, which could bring down the price of a single pack of cigarettes to as low as $2. In addition to saving money, the recipients of these coupons develop brand loyalty and start to believe the tobacco companies care about their well-being. The tobacco companies also track each coupon's use, and so the cycle continues. They send more coupons to their loyal shoppers, who become more addicted with each stop at the cash register.
So that the price of those cigarettes must be zero at that price. So that's how the dollar, I think, is spent.
Well, first of all, I don't know the exact details here, but I think the cost of making these cigarettes is very low. So the tobacco companies make a profit no matter how low the price, really. Right. They use the coupons because they understand that smokers, potential smokers, particularly young people, are price sensitive. Data shows very conclusively that for every 10% increase in the price of cigarettes, there's a 7% drop in teen smoking and a 4% drop overall. It really works as one of the most effective ways to reduce smoking is to increase the price. We'll talk a little later about a specific success in Maryland. But that's why they use these coupons, because they know price increases reduce smoking.
Especially teens, who are twice as vulnerable to that kind of messaging.
Yes, twice as vulnerable. And I noticed in the piece there was a little bit on the smokeless.
Mm-hmm.
And tobacco companies are right now pushing the smokeless tobacco as an alternative because of some of our success in passing smoke-free workplace laws. So you can't smoke in restaurants, and there's been a big drop in cigarette smoking. So they're pushing the smokeless tobacco as an alternative. Recently, the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, a wonderful national organization that coordinates a lot of the work on this issue, worked with Faith United Against Tobacco to encourage Major League Baseball to have their players not use these products, so the kids don't get so addicted by saying, "Wow, this pitcher is using it. I'm going to use it." So Major League Baseball didn't do everything we wanted, but they did restrict the players' use of these products in substantial ways. So we have to make sure when we're talking about tobacco, it's not just cigarettes. In fact, in Maryland, just this past year, we significantly raised the tax on what's called other tobacco products, little cigars and smokeless tobacco, because over the the last few years, there's been a big drop in cigarette smoking, but an increase in the use of little cigars by kids and of smokeless tobacco, which are just as deadly. So this year we rectified that by increasing the tax on those products. What people working on this issue need to know is that the data shows that there are three policies that really work. Increasing the tax on tobacco products, cigarettes, little cigars, smokeless tobacco, making workplaces smoke-free, and funding a tobacco prevention program that can do smart advertising, have a quit line, and encourage people to smoke. If you do all three of those things, you can significantly reduce smoking in your state.
That sounds very achievable.
Yes.
What a wonderful program we've got today. Coming up next, Justin's in the kitchen with some healthy food for us. So stay tuned. We'll be back after a short break.
I know I'm looking for something. But what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure. But I know it's going to take faith.
Welcome back. Justin, what have you got?
Today we're making a bean bowl.
Bean bowl? Now that's a new one for me.
Well, not for long. Beans!
Beans!
Wouldn't you know? Super easy. This is just a can of black beans, a can of red kidney beans, a can of chickpeas, some lime juice, some cilantro if you want it, and a little bit of salt. It's super easy. And really, you don't need a recipe for that. This is just something that I'll make for dinner sometimes. I'll get some various types of beans together, put it together in a bowl, warm it up, and eat it with corn chips, maybe with some brown rice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just very fast, really simple, and it's got massive amounts of fiber. You're getting protein.
Carbohydrates.
Carbohydrate.
And excellent.
Get that cilantro on there. You've got all the wonderful cilantro-y things happening.
So, sounds great.
So one option is...
So a can of each?
Doing it,
just the same amount of each of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Equal parts. And being the bachelor that I am, I usually just pop it in the microwave. But this works too. You just warm the beans up however you like to warm them. And doesn't that look nice?
It looks really colorful.
You've got a spectrum of colors going
there.
Yes.
Yeah. Very nice.
And
now do you put your cilantro in now or
I usually use it as a topping. Yeah, I'll put in a little bit of lime juice, which, you know, you've got all those beans. It can kind of taste kind of thick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this kind of gives it a high note, a little brightness to the flavor. So
and just cuts it a little
so it doesn't bog down the flavor. Yeah, a little bit of salt, and
although often
you. You might want to taste the beans first.
Yeah, often the beans, if they're canned, will already have salt.
That's true.
So if you've made them yourself, I can understand you wanting to put some salt in there. Did you want to do your little squeezy trick? No, you had enough.
Well, if it was me, I'd put probably two limes on there.
Really?
I'm a limey kind of guy.
Well, then go on.
I might.
Yeah.
Now, the trick here... So you don't want to get the seeds, so you actually turn it upside down and squeeze it through your fingers like this. And the benefit then is that your hand smells like lime juice for the rest of the day.
Oh, yum, which makes up for your breath, which probably smells like raw onions.
Exactly. Knowing me.
Knowing you.
Yes. So what do you say we grab a hold of these with some corn chips?
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just bring this over here.
There we go.
Mm.
And then you probably want to put some cilantro on top then.
Yes.
Oh, this is looking more and more beautiful. And yummy. Would that be about what you'd serve? Oh, very nice.
Yum. Doesn't that look great?
That looks great. You ready?
Yeah.
Let's destroy it now that we've built it. Mm-mm.
The lime juice is just the right thing, isn't it?
Yep. And I love cilantro, though some people have a genetic thingy that makes cilantro taste peppery and very unpleasant.
Oh, really?
So 2 or 3% of the population. So if you don't like cilantro, we understand. Now let's get back to tonight's topic and take a look at what happened in 2009. We've been discussing it in the first segment. So let's actually see what President Obama did with tobacco.
I just wanted to give a quick statement about the kids' tobacco legislation that passed the Senate yesterday. This bill has obviously been a long time coming. We've known it for years, even decades, about the harmful, addictive, and often deadly effects of tobacco products. Each year, Americans pay nearly $100 billion in added health care costs due to smoking. Each day, about 1,000 young people under the age of 18 become regular smokers. For over a decade, leaders of both parties have fought to prevent tobacco companies from marketing their products to children and provide the public with the information they need to understand what a dangerous habit this is. And after a decade of opposition, all of us are finally about to achieve the victory with this bill, a bill that truly defines change in Washington. I'm proud that the House and the Senate have acted swiftly and in an overwhelmingly bipartisan fashion to pass this legislation that will protect our kids and improve our public health.
1,000 young people a day take up the habit. That's a very sobering statistic.
It's very sobering.
Mm. Because the industry actually preys on the young, doesn't it?
Well.
Or are there two groups, two target groups?
In your segment at the beginning, the professor was talking about the documents that came out in the 90s. Because of all these lawsuits by attorneys general and private people, the courts forced the tobacco companies to reveal secret documents from decades that they had compiled. And some amazing things came out of there, where one tobacco executive was quoted as saying, well, somebody asked him, well, why don't you smoke? And he said, well, that's not for me. That's for the young, the black, and the stupid. And another tobacco executive was saying,
wow,
should we go after kids? And he said, and this is quoted in these documents, if they've got lips, we want them. That's the kind of attitude which resulted in Joe Camel. Many of us remember in America in the 90s, early 90s, they had this huge creature that kids loved called Joe Camel that was attracting kids to cigarettes. And there were some studies showing, it was so ubiquitous, so everywhere, that some studies showed that little kids could recognize Joe Camel before they recognized Mickey Mouse. Mm. The result of that was through the mid-90s, cigarette smoking rates amongst teens was skyrocketing into the 30% or more. Very, very bad. Mm. That's when the public health community concluded that one of the best ways to counter this was by increasing tobacco taxes. And in my own state of Maryland, an effort was made to do that, which failed, and failed several times until the faith community came together and said, we have had enough. And I'll never forget, Doctor, we had this press conference of the top faith leaders in Maryland, and the head of the United Methodist Church said that he wanted to kick the butts of the tobacco companies. And he was so upset when that wasn't in the paper. But what was in the paper was the head of the Lutheran Church of Maryland, who said that for decades, centuries, the Lutherans had made fun of the Methodists and the Baptists for getting so upset about tobacco. And this bishop of Lutheran Church said, I'm here to say the Methodists were right and we Lutherans were wrong. And we Lutherans are going to join with the Methodists and the Baptists and the Adventists to do something about this problem. And as a result, the front page of the Baltimore Sun's headline was "Clerics Back, Tobacco Tax Increase." And that night on TV, I don't remember exactly what it was, but the icon was something like God versus tobacco. And the message was clear that the faith community of Maryland had had enough of what the tobacco companies were doing. And as a result, in 1999, we passed this historic increase in the cigarette tax. But my point is that the tobacco companies' effort to get everybody to smoke, including kids, is best countered with these smart public health policies. And because the tobacco companies are so powerful, it is only when the faith community comes together that we can overcome them.
So what is the government doing? Do they take the initiative? Do they wait for the little guy to come along and lobby? Or are they actively involved in
this
process?
Let me say there are government officials, and we'll see them in the tape we see a little later, who are really interested in this issue. President Obama made it one of his priorities when he was first elected to pass this legislation. This is one of the very first pieces of legislation that he signed into law, authorizing the Food and Drug Administration for the first time to regulate tobacco companies. Mm-hmm. And Governor Martin O'Malley of Maryland has been doing great things, and Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown to have similar success in Maryland. But many people in government are frightened of the tobacco companies or don't want to take them on, and they need the push from us. They need the public to say.
So they need to know they're supported.
They need to know the people want this. Our polling shows overwhelming majority of Marylanders, and I've seen this all across the country, overwhelming majority of Americans want tobacco tax increases, smoke-free workplaces. They want these things to happen. But in order to transform that public will into political power, you have to reach out and build coalitions. And I have found the faith community to be the most important element of such a coalition.
Well, coming up next, Sean, our trainer, is going to show us some exercise that will certainly help your health. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, tobacco tax spending down, diabetes prevention before birth, and men on multivitamins, less cancer. A new report from several public health organisations shows tobacco prevention spending peaked at nearly $750 million in 2002. Since then, this budget has fallen, especially since the recession. Next year, the states will spend only $460 million. That's less than 2% of their annual tobacco tax and settlement revenues. According to the report, healthcare costs relating to tobacco use total almost $100 billion annually. The CDC recommends that 12% of the revenue, or $3.7 billion, be spent on tobacco prevention across the states. However, only two states, Alaska and North Dakota, will fund programs at this level, and four states have allocated no funds for tobacco prevention in 2013. When the report says, given such a strong return on investment, states are being penny-wise and pound-foolish, I most certainly agree. An important study highlights another risk factor for diabetes that starts even before birth. According to findings from Spanish researchers, one way to arrest diabetes epidemic is to ensure that pregnant women eat a healthful diet that focuses on fruits and vegetables and is low in animal fats. This can protect their babies from being born with already high levels of glucose and markers of insulin resistance, showing that the diet in pregnancy affects the development of the fetal pancreas. So ladies, fruits and veggies in pregnancy makes a healthy child. Men who took a daily multivitamin had a reduced risk for cancer, according to a study published recently in the Journal of the American Medical Association. After an average of 11 years follow-up, researchers from Harvard's Physicians Health Study 2 found a modest reduction in the risk for total cancer among the almost 15,000 men who used a multivitamin. So men, you might consider taking one, especially if your diet is less than ideal.
I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
In our current series on Hope Sabbath School, we're looking at the big picture of Scripture, growing in Christ and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior. We'll be looking from Genesis all the way to Revelation, the big story of God's good plan for each one of our lives. We hope you'll join us for Hope Sabbath School and see what God can do to bless your life.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Now, Sean, what are you up to today? You building blocks?
I am building blocks. We're just going to go higher and higher until no one can see us.
Really? Well, we better get working fast then.
So, you know, today is 12, 12, 12, right? So that's how we're going to keep the reps today. 12, 12, and 12.
Ooh.
Simple, right?
Okay.
All right, let's start with some jumping jacks, all right? Let's get warmed up. Remember, dynamic exercises get warmed up. Static exercises to cool down, all right? Let's do 5 and 3, 2 and 1. Go. 1, 2, 3. 4 and 5. All right, you can keep going, maybe 30 seconds.
I can't count. Yep.
Can't count.
All right.
All right, let's go down side by side.
All right.
Actually, I want you to come next to me for sure.
Okay.
All right, let's move this out the way for now. We'll use that afterwards.
All righty.
Remember, 12, 12, and 12, right? So what we're going to do is stay in this position, and I want you to pick up this hand, and I'm going to pick up my hand and we give a high five. 1. Go ahead. 2. Work in the core. 3. Keep going. 4. We're going to go to 5. And 5. We're going to switch sides. You come over.
Woohoo. Otherwise, I'll get have one shoulder bigger than the other, right?
3, 2, and 1. Go. 1. 2. That arm that's stable and on the ground is keeping you up. 3. 4. All the way up. And 5. Remember, we're going to 12, all right? You're going to go to 12. Face me. All right. What we're going to do is some squat jumps, but just like how we were clapping,
yep.
We're going to squat down and then high five, all right?
All right.
3, 2, and 1, go. 1, 2, 3.
This isn't fair.
4.
I'm sure it's in you.
5, switch sides.
I bet you do that with Chad as well.
Actually,
oh, okay, you stay this side. Right there.
3, 2, and 1, go. 1. Come on, jump. 2, 3, 4, and 5. You're going to 12, remember, 12, all right?
So, keep going, keep going.
So you know what? Let's switch sides.
All right.
And we're going to use this
box.
You can use anything you want. Let's push, position that. And what we're going to do is put one foot, you're going to put one foot there. We're going to go right foot, left foot, but that's considered 1. We're going to 12, all right?
All right.
3, 2, and 1. Go. 1, 1.
Oh.
2, 2, 3, 3, 4, 4, 5, 5, 6, 6, 7. 8, 8, 9, 10, 10, 11, 12, and 12. All right, so you work in your chest, a little bit in the core. See, out of breath already.
I'm working the core, my heart, and my lungs.
There you go. Working the lungs. All right. So that's a great way to add some type of cardio exercise. You can use two. Do we still have yellow pages around here? You can use yellow pages. You could use a brick. You could use a step.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to kind of add in some type of cardio exercise.
Great.
Remember, 12, 12, and 12, it's kind of easier. You can't forget it.
No, you can't.
You can't.
That's great.
All right, let me show you a really cool stretch.
Okay.
All right. Now, keep on repeating that workout, you know, for about 5-10 minutes or so. Totally up to you.
Mm.
What we're going to do is put our hands down and put our right leg outside of our right arm. Okay? And what we're going to do is take the outside arm here and pick it up, all the way up, all right? Stretching that lower back, stretching the legs a bit, bring it down, and then we're gonna take the inside arm and all the way up. You may find one side maybe stronger than the next, then you switch. Let's do the outside arm all the way up. Back down and here.
Perfect.
Now, what may happen in this position is you may feel like you can't get here because you're tight on that lower back.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's bring the legs here. And if that is the case where you can bring that leg, that arm up, I want you to stretch a little bit. You can take this right leg and stretch that lower back. All right, some of these muscles in your lower back may be tight, may need some additional stretching. All right, and you could go right here. Why did I put this right leg over the left? Is to stretch out the hamstring just a little bit more.
Mm.
Right, switch, come up.
Yeah, you can feel it, can you?
You can.
Mm.
All right, all the way down. Static exercises, you can hold these positions for about 5 to 10 seconds until you feel that muscle getting a little bit more elastic. And let's open up nice and wide, all the way down. Plus it feels good.
Yeah, it does.
Doesn't it? All right, like a cat, we're gonna come up nice and slow, like a scared cat. How you feel?
Good. Yeah, I feel alive again.
Alive again?
Yeah.
You're always spunky.
Well, thanks, Sean.
You're very welcome. Very welcome.
You have a great holiday.
You too. You too. Enjoy.
Okay. Very good. Well, coming up, I'm looking forward to answering your questions. I love to hear from you, so keep them coming. But first, let's enjoy another Ageless Advantage.
Is the obesity epidemic real or a lot of hype? Data from the National Center for Health Statistics shows that in the year 2000, almost two-thirds of the U.S. population was overweight or obese. Increasing your physical activity is an effective way to lose weight. Swimming, tennis, gardening, and bicycling are all good ways to be active. The epidemic is real. The good news is that you don't have to be a statistic. A physically active life is another ageless advantage.
We've got a great offer for you. If you call now, ask us a question about tobacco during our live broadcast, we'll send you this book, Celebrations, for free. So call us now, 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Make a beautiful Christmas gift for someone. If you're calling from overseas or texting your questions, the number's 301-960-5144. And the free book offer is restricted to viewers of our live show here in America. Now, if you missed a previous episode or you want to download one of our recipes, then visit our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Thanks for your comments and your questions. And let's take a look at some now. A caller asked, how do you keep stress off your mind? Well, it can be difficult sometimes if you've got a really packed schedule or you're really stressed about something. But there are some really simple answers to that question. One of them is what we've just been doing, which is exercise. Exercise can really help to de-stress. And another great one is just going outdoors. It's been found that even just 5 minutes outdoors in the woods or in a park, somewhere where you can get out in nature, can really make a big impact on stress levels. So try those two things or simply take time out. But those two things are really good. Combine them and it's even better. Lucy asks, is kale healthier than spinach? Is there protein in kale? I heard kale is a good source of protein, as good as meat. Well, Lucy, that is true. Kale has protein in. In fact, all vegetables have protein. We don't think of them as having protein, but you know you can get sufficient protein just from vegetable sources. Sufficient. And the problem with having protein from meat is you can actually overdose on protein. And we'll be talking about that in some of our upcoming shows, in fact. So great question. One caller asked, what's the best age for a child to start exercising? Well, I have a question for you. I've never found a way to stop children exercising, so if you've got one, please tell us about it, because I just find they're like energizer bunnies. They just go on and on and on. So, but we don't call it exercise. They're just active. They run around. And so I would just say keep them active, and they do it right from when they first start to walk. Esther called, what's the healthiest way to eat vegetables, raw, steamed, or boiled? Well, Esther, I would say steamed, but some vegetables should be eaten raw. Some you get more nutrients out from cooking, such as spinach and carrots. Well, thanks for sending your questions. Keep them coming. If you've got a question on tobacco, our number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, before we continue our conversation with Vinnie DiMarco, how much do you think a human life is worth? Watch this video.
message is so powerful yet and positive.
Yes.
I found that really a very inspiring little clip.
And one of the things that has at the end of that message is demand smoke-free workplaces, because we know that secondhand smoke kills. Tobacco smoking is deadly. 400,000 Americans die every year. But what many people don't know is that 36,000 people die from secondhand smoke, somebody else's smoke, every year. Many states, like Maryland, are now smoke-free. You can't smoke in public places. But there are many other states that are not. And one of them that is not is Texas. And in Texas, we're working right now. Faith United Against Tobacco is working to make Texas smoke-free. So if any of you are in Texas, check out Google Smoke-Free Texas and join in the effort, because that's very important effort right now to make Texas a smoke-free state.
Absolutely. It sounds like that's time critical. People really need to get on board.
It's happening right now. It's happening right now.
Mm. Now, we saw the clip from President Obama, some of the costs of smoking. What are some of the costs that America pays for the smoking industry?
Well, one cost simply is 400,000 lives every year. 400,000 people die preventable deaths because of tobacco.
Wow.
And so many of us know a loved one, an uncle, an aunt, a mother, a father, a friend who died an early death because of smoking. That's the biggest cost.
Mm. Mm.
But then there are health care costs. As President Obama says, hundreds of billions of dollars a year because of taking care of people in the hospital who smoked and got ill. And we all pay that cost through the uncompensated care of hospitals, et cetera. Mm. So every way you look at it, it's a terrible burden on society that so many people are smoking.
Now, as a lobbyist, you led a campaign here in Maryland to increase the smoking tax. And you went out against the giant tobacco industry, and you won. Tell us about the strategy. What happened there? And I know you brought us a video clip, so you just tell us when you want that.
Well, in Maryland in 1999, as I mentioned earlier, the faith community came together and said, we've had enough. And they joined hundreds of other labor, business, healthcare, youth groups that said, we've had enough of the tobacco companies stopping us from protecting our kids, and we got a new tobacco tax increase in 1999. And since then, we've increased cigarette tax 3 times, and this past year increased the tax on little cigars and smokeless tobacco. The result, doctor, is so exciting. We've had a 32% drop in smoking in Maryland, double the national average. So nationally, smoking has gone down 15%. In Maryland, 32%. And I have this chart that shows how every time this cigarette tax went up, that chart will show you, every time the cigarette tax went up, the smoking went down. It's like a direct relationship.
Wow, that's a powerful graph.
It's my favorite chart.
Well, I can see why.
If anybody ever says to you, public health measures don't work, show them this chart.
Hmm.
32% drop in smoking, and let me translate that into lives. We estimate that over 240,000 Marylanders didn't smoke who would have.
Quarter of a million people.
Of those, 70,000 would have died horrible tobacco-caused deaths. Could you imagine a better public health victory?
Mm-mm.
And
it's amazing.
Under our Governor Martin O'Malley, Lieutenant Governor Brown in Maryland, in the most recent tobacco tax increase, we used the money to expand health care to over 100,000 lower-income people. So that Maryland went from 34th in the country in health care for lower-income people to 14th. Using the money from a tobacco tax. A great public health victory. And we're planning to do it again.
Really?
With the help of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and many other denominations, we are working to raise the cigarette tax one more time in Maryland to $3 per pack to save many more lives. And if you're in Maryland listening to this, go to healthcareforall.com. Healthcareforall.com, and you can help us achieve this.
Mm.
We are making tremendous progress. Now, nationally, and here's what happened. Because the faith community helped us so much in Maryland, the National Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids asked us, can we replicate this state nationwide?
Right.
So that's when we created Faith United Against Tobacco.
Ah, okay.
And Faith United Against Tobacco came in and over a few years built this powerful support for the FDA regulation of tobacco. And one of the most exciting things about it is it what we had the most conservative and the most liberal denominations all together. The Southern Baptists, the Sikhs, the Seventh-day Adventists, United Methodist Baptists.
Muslims.
Yep. You name everybody was together. And now I'd like you to show that video which shows the power of Faith United Against Tobacco.
Wow, that's an accomplishment.
Been up for a while under a Republican administration, and that means a lot of committee chairmen with a lot of ideas wanting to get them out. You got a public that's asking for a lot of things. And so all those factors are creating a perfect storm of advocacy in America right now, where we're going to see and are seeing the biggest explosion in advocacy really in the history of our country.
The power of coalitions among religious groups can be seen in domestic issues as well. One such coalition formed around a national campaign called Faith United Against Tobacco.
This was a broad spectrum of faith leaders going from very conservative to very liberal on other issues who together saw, yes, we need to reduce teen smoking.
Working outside suits me. You like to smoke, too. A cigarette's good company.
Since 2002, members of the faith community stood in solidarity, calling for legislation regulating how tobacco products were sold and marketed to children.
This is an issue that really motivates people. I mean, you know, I can't think of anybody I know that doesn't have a personal tragedy in their extended family from losing family members to tobacco. And so people are very concerned about this. People don't understand why it is that the government has so little regulation of the tobacco industry.
The legislation was originally proposed in 1998, but did not win the support of Congress.
The tobacco lobby is powerful. They fight these things tooth and nail. This is an industry that kills its customers. They die 400,000 a year, and if you become 18 without smoking, 90% chance you're not going to smoke. So they need to replenish their supplies of smokers with children.
It was only after the faith community formed a diverse coalition of faith leaders, from United Methodists to Southern Baptists, that the movement began to gain momentum.
So it was really the faith groups, I believe, that mobilized and turned the tide and made this possible. When you know people by face, by name, you've been in meetings with them, you know their phone numbers, their email addresses, that's key. So you can pick up the phone and say, are we together on some issue or a piece of legislation, or are we not?
We have the most consistent number of people on the most consistent basis of any leaders in the nation.
That's where the grassroots is. That's where the people are who can make the phone calls, who can go visit legislators.
Church of the United members would speak at rallies, would attend rallies, would write letters. And when it comes to tobacco, we're like a lot of mother tigers who are very, very concerned. When you're going to come after the children, we're there.
The legislation finally passed the House and Senate with broad bipartisan support in June of this year.
Faith leaders can appeal to people on a nonpartisan basis, speaking to common values. And here you had all the major religious faiths and all the denominations united, saying, look, let's prevent suffering and especially protect the most vulnerable among us, which are the children.
On June 22, 2009, President Obama signed the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act into law, with members of the faith community looking on.
I think that this issue reveals what the faith community can do when it works together. It can be the giant that goes down in the valley to meet the giant Goliaths in other venues of life. And I think that that's what's key about what happened here. The fact that we put aside the things that we held indifference and united around this issue as the faith community and spoke as one voice.
I love that you coordinated that and brought them together, that they really could speak with one voice, because that voice was loud enough to effect tremendous change. I want to congratulate you.
Well, thank you.
And thank you, because it's wonderful to see this change happening. Now, we have some callers on the line. Vidal from California. Vidal, welcome to Go Healthy. What's your question for us this evening? Hi, Vidal. Are you there still? No? Okay. I have a text question. What is the best way to encourage a young person to stop smoking?
And that's a good question. And we found one of the best ways is increasing the price, cigarette tax increases. And in fact, a faith leader in Maryland, Reverend Fred Weimert, who's the head of the Central Maryland Ecumenical Council, wrote this wonderful op-ed in the Baltimore Sun, in which he talked about how his two sons stopped smoking because of cigarette tax increases.
Wow.
And he and his wife had tried for years to get them to quit, and they couldn't. When the cigarette tax went up, they quit. So here is this faith leader saying, my own sons stopped because of that. And
wow.
You can't beat that.
Yeah, no, you can't. You certainly cannot. Rose from Canada. Rose, welcome to Go Healthy. What's your question?
Hi. My question was, why so many people smoke?
Why so many people smoke?
It's addictive. And the fact is, as we've said a couple of times, the vast majority of people who smoke start when they're young, 12 to 15, 16 years old, when peer pressure, seeing the ads, somehow gets you to start, and then you become addicted.
Right.
That's the sad thing about smoking.
And 90% of young people do not believe that they will become addicted.
Right.
And so for them, it's experimental, it's curiosity.
Yes.
They're pushing boundaries at that age, aren't they?
Yes.
It's a time in our lives when we're actually very vulnerable to outside influences, as you mentioned, peer pressure. And then before they know it, they're addicted. And I think when I was, you know, young, 13, 14, all of my friends smoked. And, you know, one day we were out in the playground and I never had an interest because I'd grown up with this concept that why would you ever want to do that to yourself? But they asked me to hold their cigarette while they took their sweater off, and I held it like this, never intending to do anything with it. I just did it. And all five of them grabbed my hand. Erita, don't you dare smoke.
Wow.
And they were only 14, you know? And wow. I realized that day that, wow, if these girls had a choice, they wouldn't be smoking either.
But that's a great story.
And so it is just so addictive.
Yeah.
Now, there's another caller who's gone off the line who asked, will smoking affect my unborn child? And I'm an OBGYN, so I'm going to take this one for you, Vinny. And I just want to say, absolutely yes. In fact, if we know that smoking makes for a smaller baby, and a lot of mums, especially young mums, will say, great, it's smaller, it's easier to part with. But, you know, it doesn't make the child just smaller, it makes it more unhealthy.
Mm.
That baby is more prone to stillbirths, more prone to cot deaths, which is such a tragedy.
Yeah.
And small babies are more prone to illnesses, and then that smoking in the house makes them more prone to ear infections, asthma, and on and on. So I just plead with you, if you're pregnant, girls, please quit now. Now, there's no better time than now. And if we do an ultrasound on, you know, babies do breathing exercises in utero. If we get a mum to light up while she's having an ultrasound, that breathing all stops. That babe goes quiet. And so, makes a big difference. Well, I want to thank you so much
for
being here today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great. Thank you so much, Vinny. Now, if you're passionate about protecting the young from being preyed upon by the tobacco industry, then you need to take action. Remember, if you're in Texas, in Maryland, those are two states, but action needs to be done now. Lobby local government, exercise your vote. Give power to your voice by linking up with an organization that is bigger than just yourself. And remember, your faith community has power and a voice and authority. Change is not just needed, it is possible. So go on, get involved. I want to thank you for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. On tomorrow's show, we have a number of topics to discuss, including pediatric emergencies. Don't miss it. We'll see you then.